Welcome back to Power of the Mind, where we give you simple tools to improve your relationship with yourself and with others. In this episode, we're going to talk about weight loss for a second time and talk a little bit about how it relates to trauma and what some of the tools are that can be most effective in helping us move through weight loss, especially if we've had a bit of trauma in our past. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Power of the Mind, presented by Granite Mountain Behavioral Healthcare, broadcasting from the Cast 11 studios with my favorite guy, Greg Struve. How's it going?
Hello. It's going great.
Great. Yeah. So I wanted, we're in it now.
We're
in the weight loss journey. And
Part two.
So some things that I said kind of piqued your interest.
Yes, absolutely. At the end of the last episode, you were talking about a book that was offering to help you change the way you think about weight loss and the way you think about food and the way you think about probably life, I think.
Life, yeah.
By the
compound effect.
The compound effect, which I do not know the book. I'm sure it's
I haven't opened the cover yet.
Oh, so you don't know the book either.
No, we start tomorrow. We start tomorrow. So we're tackling together.
One thing that can be really interesting when we're talking about self-help books, I don't know if you've ever had the experience of reading a book and being like, this is the best thing ever. And then 3 months later, it's gone. Or 6 months later, it's gone.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, or tomorrow it's gone. And actually, in the publishing industry, they have a rule of thumb that says the majority of the books that gets purchased won't be read past the 18th page. So whatever you have to say, you better say it in the first 18 pages, and it better be memorable. And it better get the attention of the reader so that they're inspired to go beyond page 18. Isn't that interesting? And actually, if I go and look in my library of the books that I own, it kind of checks out, actually. Yeah. There's an awful lot of books
I have. If you can't wow me in like half an hour, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like if you cannot capture my attention.
A lot of pressure on the author.
Right? Yeah. Terrible.
So one thing that's really interesting when we talk about weight loss is talking about how our minds work from a perspective of a thing called internal family systems. Internal family systems was developed by this dude, Dick Schwartz is his name. And Dick figured out early on in his career that people talk in parts and think in parts. What makes his system, I think, pretty unique, because this isn't new. There's lots of actual theories that talk about the different parts in the brain. This parts therapy has its own kind of realm within psychology. But what Dick Schwartz's contribution that I think was really helpful was he classified the parts into three sort of general categories, right? So we all have parts of our psyche. You have a part of you that is really excited about watching this TV show, and a part of you that thinks, man, I really should, you know, go do something else with my time. Another party that thinks, man, the actor in this TV show is really brilliant and very attractive. I just want to see how this thing goes, right? So I can have three or four different parts of me at any given time.
All right, how many people are living up here?
Oh man, right? It's a committee for me And when I do this work with clients, sometimes they say, Greg, do you think I have multiple personality disorder? Right? I say, no, everybody has different parts.
Okay.
There are three sort of broad classifications of parts. There are the parts that we are accustomed to having now, and those parts are generally in control of the situation, and they're trying to be in control on an ongoing basis. And they think about the future, and they think about what's the best way to get what I want on an ongoing basis in this world. How do I navigate the world effectively? And they're protector parts. They're designed to protect me from loss, more or less, right? So these initial protectors are really hoping to cover up the exiles. That's another classification of parts. We have several different classifications, really three broad classifications of parts. Exiles are these parts that hold a lot of my shame or my pain or unpleasant emotional experiences from the past. So what happens if I'm young and something terrible or even just really unpleasant happens to me? And the emotion is overwhelming for one reason or another, I'll split it off into this part that kind of is quiet, and then I'll bury that part with this protector that is designed to be in control all the time. And so my protector walks around and says, okay, Greg, you should be a smart guy and get a degree and go get a job where you help people, and then maybe everybody will be safe and everything will react the way you think it should, and you won't feel your shame. And that works a lot of the time in my life, right? I've done that to the best of my ability. But then every once in a while, somebody says something that reminds me of some shame that's buried in there, right? And so my little shame exile says, ah, shame. Mm-hmm. And then it comes up and the protector says, okay, have a seat, go away. We don't need that. We're doing a podcast right now. Don't show the world your shame right now. Don't start crying on the podcast and it's not going to work, right? Which actually a lot of podcasts do relatively well when people are vulnerable and authentic. So there's some value and validity to that. And that's part of why parts therapy has been so useful, is because it helps people become more authentic and more connected with parts of themselves that they otherwise try to ignore and sort of hope aren't there. But there's another classification of parts as well, and those are the protectors. I already said the protectors, sorry. Richard Schwartz calls them the firefighters. And the firefighter's job is to put out the fire. If the exile gets out of control, and they usually do, mm-hmm. right? If an exile comes up, they're used to being ignored and they'll flood the system.
They'll spiral, right?
Oh man, things get rough. You ever have a shame spiral? Somebody says something and you think, or a rage spiral, like you're ready to absolutely lose your mind. The protector says, the firefighter says, stands up and says, hey, listen, don't do that. In fact, eat this donut. Take this methamphetamine. In fact, do whatever you need to do. Bite your tongue physically. Do whatever you need to do to make yourself feel better. Or shame yourself loudly and harshly in an effort to get this thing to go away so that you don't suffer.
Wow.
The firefighters believe that if the exiles come out, you will die. Now, they're not that smart, so it's not actually true most of the time. Every once in a while, it is actually true. But firefighters are designed to protect me from things and to take care of things in an emergency situation. And the trick with the firefighting parts of my psyche is they don't plan ahead. They don't have the ability to think about the consequences of their behavior. So if I'm in a situation where my anger is going to come up, for example, and I come out of a family system where me expressing anger, particularly to the authority of my family or the authorities in my family, resulted in a lot of danger, that firefighter is going to come up hard and they're not going to be super concerned with how things are going to go as a result of their intervention. So they might say, go drink a lot, you know, go eat. It's a good one. A lot of people anesthetize mm-hmm. their rage or their anger or their frustration with food. There's a lot of different things that they'll do.
Do anything other than react
Do not do what you're about to do. Do not feel this shame. Do not sit with this guilt about what happened.
Bury it,
and here's how. I have an easy solution, and a lot of us develop a series of easy solutions. Netflix is an easy solution for a lot of mm-hmm. people. Food, sex, gambling, meth, alcohol, you name it, shopping, Instagram, Facebook. Those are things that are really easy to use to numb out. And that's what the firefighters do to keep us safe. Hmm. So it's interesting because if I spend a lot of time focusing on what can I think, cognitive behavioral therapy is sort of the foundational branch of modern therapy. And it says that if you change your thoughts, that'll change your feelings, which will change your experience of the world. And to some degree, that's true. And it works really well until it doesn't anymore.
Right.
It's like it has a certain threshold for helping. And then it doesn't seem to work. And one of the reasons I think it stops working is because it stops dealing with parts other than those protector controlling initial parts that we put on for ourselves and for the world. We expect ourselves in a moment of anger or fear to be able to think through the long-term consequences of our behaviors. Anybody who's ever been in a fight with their mm-hmm. partner knows that that's just not the case.
Right.
We say and do things that are pretty rough
yeah.
in those situations.
Nobody is going, oh gosh, if I say this, it could get pretty bad.
Yeah. Every once in a while after you've done it a few times, there's a little voice in your head that says, maybe not.
Don't go there.
Maybe the consequences do outweigh the pain. But as a general rule, and if you get hit hard enough, and safety seems like it's being threatened, those firefighters come out and they do all kinds of tough stuff. So in the context of weight loss, I think it's really important to look at, if I'm struggling with weight loss or wanting to lose weight, one of the things that can be really, really helpful actually is to look at areas in my life where there is something that is either unfair or deeply untrue, a lie I'm telling myself or a lie that I'm living. If there is a particular thing that I am suppressing. Anger is one that I see a lot. I have a lot of clients come in who have a lot of anger and don't know it and don't want to do it and don't want to deal with it. And the answer to the problem always is, what would happen if you dealt with your anger? Well, people would think I'm bad, or I would lose my relationship, or I would, right. I mean, there's like a million different things that people want to stay away from, and a lot of different reasons to continue to keep doing what they're doing. But if we're looking at the psychological underpinnings of struggles with weight loss, it's really, really common for there to be something like that, right? And when that thing comes up, the firefighter comes right behind it. And the firefighter, okay, for a lot of us is food. It is for me. My wife, mm-hmm, teases me about chocolate. I love chocolate.
Yeah.
So she says, oh, what are you upset about? I can tell. The M&Ms are gone. Oh, all right. You got me there. So it's something that I've had come up at various points over my life, over the years, for sure. And that's a classic sort of firefighter move.
So don't deal with this. Go eat your donut. Go eat your... And you would always think, I see people that, you know, like the 600-pound life. We referenced that earlier. Sure. It's like there's something that... What is pushing them to just give up and to go in that direction? You know, because I think for most of us, we gain 40 pounds and then we go, this is ridiculous. I've got to get this weight off. What gets somebody to that point in their life where that is, I mean, 600-pound life, you see it. There's got to be, forget the lap band, forget the losing weight, whatever it is that they do. You've got to get deep into that psyche to figure out what drove them to that.
I have worked with many clients over the years who were morbidly obese. My experience has been that every single one had a really awful trauma history. I don't know if that's the case for every morbidly obese client there is. And I'll also mention that several of them, their trauma histories on the surface didn't seem so bad because they were woefully neglected or they were psychologically abused, right? Sometimes people come into my office and say, why am I so miserable, even though, you know, I have friends who were sexually abused or who were really awfully beaten, and I was never either of those things. Why are things so rough on me? And we get this idea, we find out, like, oh, you had a lot of, like, low-grade trauma, but every day for your whole life, you felt neglected, overlooked, not a part of, or you moved all the time, or you were never sure, you know, if mom was going to be sober or drunk when you got home, even though she was good to you all the time. Even she was a friendly, happy drunk, but you're never sure who was going to be at home with you. You didn't know if you're going to have a dangerous guy in the house or a dangerous gal in the house when you got home. All these different factors, and there was just a ton of fear all the time.
You didn't know if you were going to be taken care of or taking care of someone else, right?
When sure, that's a good one too. That's a really... And the impact of that, the fear of that, will often create a setting or a situation in which somebody would rather eat. And the 600-pound life is just that with food. Yeah. I see a lot of people who work with sex addiction, right? I can think of a client I had who I think was, by his own count, over 300 or 400, in the 300 to 400 range. Wow. As far as people he had sex with, right? So again, sometimes I'd tease him a little and be like, is it kind of the same after a while, right? Isn't it? I mean, you're going to... There's not a lot of difference, right? But there's a variety. My 600-pound life has its equivalent in every addiction. It has its equivalent in the guy who plays the slots from, you know, I'd say morning to night, but often the slots folks, there's no morning and there's no evening in the casino. It's just a perpetual thing. It has its equivalent in folks who, you know, use drugs and alcohol and things like that. And the idea is to escape from a truth that I don't feel capable of or don't have the capacity to face.
So this is something they can control. They can control the food or the comfort of the food, or...
With food in particular, there is, you know, you mentioned the comfort part. We talk a lot about the attachment system in therapy, in the therapy world right now. It's been up for the last 5 or 10 years, and that's great. And the attachment system is the part of the body that connects with a caregiver and feels a sense of safety as a result of that connection. And it's really primary. And it's right next to food as far as the hierarchy of things that you need. You have to eat to survive. And as an infant, you have to attach to survive. Mm-hmm. If you don't have somebody attached to you, you don't have the tools to function in the world at all. You know, every other mammal is born with the ability to more or less function in the world in a short period of time, or they're in a nest of some kind. You know, there's some sort of external protection, but even the ones in the nest or the cave or whatever, they have to bond, they have to connect, they have to attach. Right. And the thing with food is that point of satiation can be a real place of connection and a real place of sort of surrogate attachment and settling. And it can really replicate the experience of being attended to. It doesn't replicate it particularly effectively, but it's an awful lot better than nothing.
Right.
And so you'll have a lot of folks who will get onto a diet of some kind or try to discipline themselves food-wise. And with a lot of social support, they can make it, but it's extremely challenging and they don't really know why. Their anxiety spikes, their depression goes through the roof, and they're not sure what happened. And part of it's biological, but a lot of it is this attachment piece, a lot of the time, is my experience.
Yeah, it's the more and more that I've researched it, it's definitely you have to get to the psychology of it. You have to, you know, jumping on a diet or something will work until it doesn't, until you're done. And so that's where that's where I battle. It's like, I know how to lose weight. It's like you said, simple math. You take in less calories than you expel. That's it. So maybe pick up a dumbbell or, you know, do some extra walking, but it's pretty easy. I mean, the science is easy. It's the mental to me that is the difficult, you know. It's like convincing yourself that, you know, it's the big popular words right now are like manifesting. Like, how do you manifest
this? That's a thing.
So, I mean, I'm like, should I be telling myself you're healthy, you look good, you're, you know, in those size jeans? Like, does that work? Is that something that's going to be helpful? You know, I see myself as this and my brain's just going to believe it, or?
Well, it comes back to that idea we talked about in the last episode where it's easy to discover that you have outperformed your self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And I've had several situations where I've witnessed that with people. And I think I've probably done it myself in my life as well, where I've gotten into a situation and thought, man, I'm out of my league here. And pretty swiftly found myself no longer out of my league because I'm not there anymore. And so I think there is probably some merit in creating a mindset around whatever goal I have. I think there's probably a lot of value to that.
Right.
The manifesting and the idea. You know, one of the things that we don't hear about very often in that literature that I think is worth mentioning too is that what we cling to, what we want, sometimes drives away what we're trying to manifest. You know, so people will say, do affirmations, affirm that you look this or that. But if you look at your life, the wantingness, the experience of wanting something almost always invariably drives it away from you. So one thing I think is really important if we're talking about manifesting is to manifest things sort of lightly. When I have a lot of drive and desire and pull toward things, it tends to, and really, in some respects, it's an affirmation of lack, right? I really want this car is reminding myself that I don't have it. So that's just an interesting side note with regard to the manifesting philosophy and approach to things, which I do think is pretty effective.
I think so too. I mean, if you believe it, you achieve it, all that fun stuff. But it does make sense that it kind of backfires too. It's like, you know, I'm this, I'm this, I'm this. And it's like, no, you're not. you're not those things. And it reminds you that you're still living in the one bedroom apartment. You haven't, you know, whatever. It's just reality can smack you upside the head pretty quickly, even though you're trying to convince yourself you're all these other things. It's like,
yeah, there's a balance of holding something in mind without necessarily holding it in mind with an amount of want that creates lack.
Right.
Not being conscious of my lack. I suppose it's the ability to hold in mind where I want to be while also appreciating and valuing where I am.
Kind of like the book, you know, the do haves and the bees, you know, if you do this, you have that and you'll be happy. It's like, yes, this is what I want, but how do I bring that joy to today? How do I, you know, I'm going to manifest this and I want this, but don't forget, you know, to smile and to be happy along the way, or to, you know, and that's where I'm kind of guessing, because we haven't dove into the book, but, you know, our, you know, the person that runs the meetings is kind of laying it out for us. It's like you work your whole life to save all this money so that you can retire, so you can finally be happy. But you've now worked 65 years and you get there and it's like, wow, I'm too sick to travel, or my wife passed, or my spouse passed. And it's like you've wasted, not wasted, but you've worked this whole time to be happy because you've convinced yourself that the only way you're going to be happy is to retire and travel. So I think it's, the book is going to help us remember that, you know, yes, this is the end goal, but how do you bring that to today? How do you smile today and be happy today?
Well, you bring up an interesting point too, because we can, we create a lot of end goals and try to achieve things. One of the other things that can be very challenging is people get to their goal in terms of their goal weight and realize that they're still not very happy.
Right.
And I see that a lot if I work with, at a client for a while who was transitioning their gender orientation, right? Transitioning to a different gender, going through all the material there. And I said, you know, one thing to think about here is that this is a part of your life. This is a decision you have made, but it's just a decision. This isn't the panacea that you might, this might not be the panacea you think it is. And when all was said and done, it really wasn't, right?
You're still the same person.
I'm still
right?
depressed. I'm still anxious. Now I have long hair, but that's it.
Right.
And I think that particularly there's so much chatter and clatter in the culture now on that particular topic. And I think the tragedy of it is there are a lot of folks who are making some pretty significant changes in their life with the underlying belief that it'll be better on the other side. And for some, that might be the, case.
Right.
Maybe even for a lot, I don't know. But there's a lot of material underneath all of us. And if you're not willing to explore that, that particular Band-Aid is a costly one. And if you miss the mark there, it can be pretty challenging. So, but weight loss, you know, the idea that I'll be happy if I get there, one of the things that can cause people to kind of move back and forth too is, one, it's a moving target. I say, oh, you know, I've only lost 40 pounds, but I need to do 25 more.
Right.
Well, 40 pounds is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not too bad, you know? And then I get the 25 more and I think, well, you know, maybe just 10 more. Pounds are like money.
Yeah.
Once I get what I think I needed,
I realize I need a little bit more.
Yeah. Be all right. And that can be a real challenge, right? Mm-hmm. For two things. One, you can, like we talked about before, you can take it too far and end up with an eating disorder. Right. The other challenge you can run into is you can get there, look around and think, now what?
Yeah, I'm still in an unhappy environment. I'm still not, you know.
Yep.
Interesting. That's I like that because it's, you've got to work on everything around you. You know, just because I've lost 40 pounds does not mean I'm all of a sudden at a better job or my husband's a nice guy now. You know, it's like,
right.
Those are things, you know, really think about, you know, being happy in your moment. What can we do? Yes, losing 40 pounds is going to make you feel better. It's going to make you a little more confident or feel better, whatever. But look at your environment. How, you know, you're still going to, like you said, now you've got long hair.
All those parts are still there, right? The part of you that hates you, the part of me that hates myself tends to withstand almost anything that I do unless I address it directly. And the internal critic often needs to be addressed directly. Sometimes it needs to be addressed before any kind of goal can be achieved, right? But it almost always needs to be addressed before any kind of goal can be enjoyed.
Yeah. Interesting. Because I tell you, I'm opposite. I am always the, I look great. I feel fine. You know, pants still fit. It's perfect. And then you get that, you see a picture of yourself or you start doing podcasting and you go, I don't like that. But you've convinced yourself everything's fine. So, you know, it's for me, it's, I think it's different because I'm happy with, you know, many parts of my life. It's just, this is the one thing that I feel is holding me back. So kind of done the work around me. Now it's like, okay, this needs to reflect everything else. So I'm hoping this is it. So I don't want to be talking to you 6 months from now going, okay, so I lost the whatever pounds and then it all came back. What happened? You know, so I'm going to keep listening. I'm going to read your book that we talked about, The Dopamine Effect.
Dopamine Nation.
Oh, Dopamine Nation.
Yeah.
So definitely we'll read that. And I'll keep you posted on this book and our new book, then how that's going. But, you know, I love talking to you. I love the weight loss, addiction, sugar, everything. It's just... it's a battle.
That's actually the thing I like about the Dopamine Nation book is she's really addressing a number of things, not just weight loss. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so helpful because it's not just the process that's underneath it. That's the other thing you'll see. Mm-hmm. Just to add one more thing, I know we're wrapping up, but you see people who I lose weight and I do it by substituting a new addiction.
Right.
I do it by finding something. You know, exercise actually can be very addictive, or something. You know, stimulants, there's all kinds of different stuff that I can do to make that happen. So that's always a risk as well. Mm-hmm. And the underlying stuff that she talks about in Dopamine Nation makes a ton of sense that way. Really describes it well.
I'm definitely going to check it out. So you guys should too. So if you're struggling with addiction, you know, I don't think you're going to see somebody over Diet Coke and sugar, but, you know, there's ton of other things.
It's not my specialty, but there's certainly, you know, you can get on Psychology Today and there's a lot of therapists in the area who are very good with food and weight loss and eating disorders and things of that nature.
Yeah. But I think you kind of lean towards the heavy stuff. So if you're battling alcohol or drug addiction.
Yeah. Granite Mountain Behavioral Healthcare. It's a great spot to look. GraniteMountainBHC.com if you're in the Arizona region.
Yeah.
And if you have questions for me, GregStruvey.com.
He's the guy.
As well.
He's awesome, as I say, right? Always awesome. You guys, thank you so much for tuning in to Power of the Mind, presented by Granite Mountain Behavioral Healthcare. We will see you next time.
For information about mental health and addiction treatment, you can reach out to Granite Mountain Behavioral Healthcare online at granitemountainbhc.com. That's granitemountainbhc.com. Or give us a call at 877-338-6287. That's 877-338-6287. If you have a comment about this podcast or a question you'd like us to address in the podcast, you can check out the Contact Us page at my website, gregstruvey.com. That's GREGSTRUV as in Victor, E as in Edward.com. This has been a Cast 11 production brought to you by Granite Mountain Behavioral Healthcare. This episode was produced by Austin Morrison. Follow Cast 11 on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest at Talking Glass Media.